Holy One, may the words of my mouth, may the meditations of our heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I'm going to show some pictures today in a few minutes. And I don't know if the choir are happy where they are or if any of them wanted to come down so they could see the big screen. So you're welcome to come down if you'd like to be able to see the big screen. Then you'll have plenty of time to come back during the very familiar hymn that we're going to sing at the end there. And because we're going to be showing those, I'm going to speak for a few minutes first. I'm going to ask Grace to shut out the beautiful sunshine so that we're able to see the slides when it's time for them. There's just a few. When Jesus first stepped into the Jordan River, no one knew who he was, except for John, his cousin. No one around him knew who he was. He was just one among many who had come before God for a new beginning. That is what baptism meant and what it still means for Jews and for Christians. A commitment to a new beginning. I can see Grace having a real struggle with things back there. Thanks, Phil. A commitment to a new beginning. Now, it is a matter of a lot of debate among Christians about whether Jesus knew all that would happen next, everything this new life would lead to. But certainly, no one else did. It was the beginning of a journey. Jesus' journey being from that river to the wilderness and to mountaintops, from riverbanks to city streets. But the real journey was among people. Jesus' longest journey was not from town to town, it was from heart to heart. And then back again sometimes when those hearts failed. And even those he touched daily, Peter, James, Mary and Mary, Martha and Veronica, John and Mark and Luke, even they didn't know what was going to happen next. And they didn't know what would be remembered, which of those many things they did would be important 2,000 years later. Some of you also remember another Bible story. We had an artful church event here last year. We wrote a song. We made art and pictures with our bodies when we learned this story. The Apostle Paul had a dream, and in that dream he saw a Macedonian asking for his help. And he set off on a journey with Luke, the disciple. And when they got to Philippi, he looked for the men that he was to help. And he looked in the market, and he looked near the temples. And he didn't find who he was looking for. This is starting to sound like a children's story, right? And he looked here, and then he looked there, and then he went, and still there was no one there. Finally, he and Luke came to the river, and they found a group of people worshiping God and seeking new understanding. They weren't the people that he thought they would be. They weren't Jews. They weren't men. They were women. They weren't the kind of women he expected. Lydia was a businesswoman, rich in her own right, who owned a house, traded goods through Greece. They were educated, questioning women, leaders in their community. And the story is there in the Bible and is still remembered because Paul and Luke learned something that day. They didn't go expecting to learn what they learned. But everything changed that day. The method of Paul's teaching, who it was who became leaders in the church, non-Jews, women. That women also could become called diakonos, the word for both teacher and priest, comes from that time. And when Paul baptized Lydia and the others in the river, the world had a new beginning. A new group of leaders. A few months ago, we began planning for a group to learn about the journey that is the Christian life. We say that because baptism and confirmation is just the beginning of a lifelong conversation. Questioning, asking, listening, learning, becoming a teacher, and then becoming a student again. And when Yoko and I started planning for a confirmation class, we had no idea what the next months would hold. First, that Yoko would get sick, and that her illness would take her away for so long. And then, that I would get sick, not as sick, not anywhere near as sick, but that I would have to be away for a month in the midst of all of our plans. But here is the marvel of what Christian community is supposed to be. The other members of the community, Lauren, and Susan, Shannon, and others, took on responsibility for this. And for Emma, baptized 2 weeks ago, the community came together to offer what was needed. And that leads me to something that is going to be so important. And it is important in the church overall. Each of you has a relationship to this community of faith, this church congregation, these people, and the wider church here in Richmond, here in Canada, around the world. A minister's job is to help those relationships grow. First, to offer opportunities to make their own relationship with God and with Jesus. But then, with other people in the community, the relationship is not just to the minister or with the minister. Ministers come and go, but this congregation has been here for 60 years, and it will continue, and it will be a place for you for many years to come. For those we have baptized and blessed and welcomed and covenanted these past weeks, their lives have a new beginning. And through them, this congregation experiences also new beginning, even through Micah. None of us know where this will lead us. It is one of the attributes of our lives that we rush so quickly from one thing to another, from one moment to another, always wondering what's the next thing that will happen, the next thing I ought to be doing, the next thing to prepare for, the next goal, God forbid, the next crisis. For this community, there's been a lot of that. There will be a time to go from this, what is a shining moment. But it isn't now. You may rest here for a time, in this time of the heart, in this time between one thing and another. As we rush from one thing to another, from one task to another, a lot is accomplished, but a lot is lost. Creativity springs not just from necessity, but from the time to be still. There are those who say that boredom is the greatest spur to creativity. The time when the phone is put away, the next task is put off, and heart meets heart. In the time of not knowing what may come, we rest in God's hands. I'm about to set off on a sabbatical, and I've been asked to speak a little bit about that. There will be Sabbath for me, and there will be rest. These next 2 weeks will be, for me, partially a time of retreat, partly a time of recovery, and partly a time of preparation. I plan to read a lot of mysteries. But there will be time over these months to read a lot of books I never get time to read, the history, the philosophy, the theology, the science fiction. And then there will be time for a trip that will take me to the area of the world not far from Philippi, where Paul met Lydia, just across the mountain range called Rhodope. And I'm going to ask if we can see. There we go. If you look up there, you can see Philippi, sort of. The name got split there. And the next slide. I'm going on an adventure to a part of the world I've never been to, a place where the language is strange and even the alphabet is different. We're going to Bulgaria and Romania, an area where, if we go back, let's go back one for a minute. Those are World Heritage Sites. There is a great number of World Heritage Sites in that area. If you look a little bit south, the grayish markings there are mountains. It's extremely mountainous. And that mountain range, the Rhodope, cut off the group of people who came from Israel, from Palestine. And there was a group that went, split around those mountains after coming across from what is now Turkey. Those who went south, Thessalonica into Greece and thence to Rome, and those who went north into what is now Bulgaria, Romania, on up around the Black Sea. And the next one, please. But they weren't the first people to get there, obviously. These natural caves, go back one, please. These natural caves were the first place that they have record of people living there, at least, though there's some argument, 70,000 years ago. And the next one. That's the oldest European prehistoric town with constructed buildings. It's about 6,000-7,000 years old, and the hill is because silt covered the constructed houses. Like so many places, this is an area where civilization rose and fell. They've recently found structures and houses that could only have been built with very sophisticated means. They're actually underneath Sophia. They were at least 2 to 3 stories high. And then that civilization fell away and people lived in mud huts for a while. The Thracians were the first of the really great civilizations there before Alexander the Great, before the Romans. Thracian tomb, the Roman amphitheater, and then the medieval time. This area is so rich with the many different groups that came in and conquered one another. And then more recently, this is the monument of the communist relationship between the Soviet Union and Bulgaria. The taller one, of course, is the Soviet Union. Okay. That's the palace of the government in Bucharest. It's sometimes called the palace of the damned dictator, because of who built it, but that's a very recent construction. That tells you just a little bit about the politics of this area, and I skipped out the whole part about the Ottoman Empire. It's extremely rugged country. It has one of the most amazing roads in the world to get you between Bulgaria and Romania. It has cliffs and mountains, areas where the only pass was walked by many people over many millennia, where the pass itself is a ridge which is about 1 meter wide. You can hike it. Because it was an area that was fought over again and again and again, the churches reflect that. In early times, the churches were built in caves, so they couldn't be attacked. They were built with few windows for the same reason. Or they were fortified. They were built on the tops of mountains and in very isolated places. But today, they reflect all of the grandeur of the many different civilizations that came together to found Christian churches, synagogues, mosques. This is an area where people are still, after millennia, learning to live together peacefully. When we're done there, in Romania and Bulgaria, that's just a couple of weeks, we're going to meet some family in Vienna. And we're going there particularly because at that week, on one of those nights, is what they call the Lange Nacht der Kirchen, which means the long night of the churches. Kirchen means churches. In Austria, most of the churches stay open that night, all night. There are services, there are concerts, there are light shows, there are rock masses, jazz masses, you name it. There's dance, all of those different things. And so we, as a sort of large extended family, are going to spend our time doing some things like that. So, what am I going to bring back to you from that trip? I hope I will come back with a renewed energy, having spent time in prayer, time in reflection. I hope to come back with renewed knowledge of the Bible and having read some theology. I hope to come back with a new sense of history of Christians and Jews and Muslims in Europe and how they've lived together, fought with one another, lived together again. I'll be on the edge of Turkey, the borders of the great history of not just the ancient world, but the modern world, the clash of religions, the meeting of the Middle East and Europe, communism, modernism. I hope, as some of you know, to explore the way that the rugged terrain has affected people's understanding of spirituality. But I have to tell you that I expect that the greatest learnings, the most profound things I will bring back to you, are things that I don't know yet. I go to a lot of United Church events and some Canadian and American Christian events, and I talk to nice people and I learn some things. But they're an awful lot like me. Most of them kind of look like me. They kind of dress like me. Often better, but they're middle class and English speaking like me. They grew up in similar circumstances to me. It can be fun and it can be educational, but it can be limiting. It's like always looking out the same window. A few years ago, I was blessed to go to Ireland to a conference there, and I thought that the most important thing that I was learning was about theology, a way of looking at and questioning the myths of religion called pyrotheology. But in fact, for me, the most important thing that I learned about was identity. The whole mess of Irish religious life and Irish politics and violence is not really about religion, it's about identity. And any change in the status quo means not just that people stop fighting or start working together or see their religion differently. It means that a man is no longer who he thought he was. That, in case you haven't noticed in the world, is a very dangerous thing. The most powerful things I have learned have come from unexpected encounters, the things that touched my heart and worked deep into my soul. At a grand high church service at Notre Dame Cathedral for the veneration of the relics, in which they have what they believe to be the crown of thorns, which they bring forward for you to see, and in its special case, to kiss if you wish. There were many priests, there were many orders of religious, there were many orders of lay people in astonishing robes. The liturgy was grand and highly structured. And in the midst of that, a tearful woman knelt on the steps by the altar in the way, praying as though her soul and life depended on it, and crying as though her heart would break. and all of us, the priests and the acolytes and lay orders and the visitors and the newcomers, honored her time and her presence and made space for her need and her grief and her physical presence. I could never have planned it. I could never have expected it. Neither could they. And yet, it remains with me in an understanding of what a church is for. At a crowded beachfront restaurant, when there was no room for us to sit down on another trip, we approached a stranger who was sitting alone, and he made room for us. And it turned out he was a pastor. He was a Pentecostal pastor from Oregon. We don't have a lot to do with Pentecostals here. Often there's great divisions. But we sat and found how much we had in common in our faith and in our lives and in our congregations. Both of us surprised by one another. He surprised that someone from such a liberal church could have so much in common with him. Now, he was from Oregon. He wasn't like from New Orleans, but I could not have planned it, but the Spirit moves. On a rainy evening, the very farthest I have been from home, when I was working on the downtown east side of Vancouver, a woman I knew and her husband, moderately drunk, approached me on the steps of First United Church and asked for a blessing. And we stood on the street holding hands, her in her wheelchair, and we blessed one another while a drug deal went down behind us and people made their way around us. I could not have planned it, and I carry that moment in my heart. So I hope I will bring back to you all the learnings that I have planned, an arrested soul, but above all that I hope that I will bring back experiences of the heart that I cannot plan, the things I will learn that right now I don't know that I don't know. I will put myself in the way of the adventure, and I will hold you in my heart and my prayers. And in the meantime, you will build the community with Judith and Ibi, and when I get back, you will teach me the things that I don't know that I don't know. And you will be my teachers, as you now for Judith and Ibi, and for Emma and Jordana and Micah and one another. And God will be your God, and we will be God's people, whether together or apart. May it be so. Amen. We're going to sing Travel.